My name is Perry Garfinkel. I'm a longtime contributor to the New York Times and the author of a book entitled Buddha or Bust. I live in Berkeley, California.
We're speaking with my friend and globe-trotting wellness correspondent, also longtime New York Times contributor, Perry Garfinkel, today. And Sounds True is going to publish your next book, Perry, which is very intriguing and, might I say, gutsy. Tell me about Being Gandhi. Where did this come from?
Yes, that is the title of the book. And by the way, nice to be with you again, Pat.
Love to hear from
the
you.
The title of the book is Being Gandhi, and the subtitle is very telling. My year-long experiment following the Mahatma's six moral principles in these immoral times. So for this next year, in fact, I've already started, and ending in November 2020, I will be following two tracks. One is to travel to and report on the many places Gandhi went. So I'll go to India, England, where he studied to become a lawyer and learn more about vegetarianism, and in South Africa, where he was a lawyer and was famously kicked off a train because they thought he was African in an apartheid country of South Africa, and that politicized him. At the same time, I am going to literally follow these six moral principles of Gandhi and keep track of them in a diary about how my progress is going, so that by the end of the year, I hope I will be a transformed person, living a more pure, less immoral life.
I can't see how you wouldn't be a different person by the time that year concluded. But first of all, let's refresh our memories here. Who is Gandhi, and why did you choose to follow him, of all people?
Well, Mahatma Gandhi, by the way, whose 150th birth anniversary is just passed on October 2nd, he was a late 19th century and early 20th century Indian who led the fight for independence of India from England. He had been a lawyer and a self-described nationalist and political ethicist. Indians consider him the father of the nation, just like we consider George Washington the father of our nation. And Gandhi's profile was raised by two Americans. One was Martin Luther King, who followed Gandhi's nonviolence principles to enact these civil rights protests of the 1950s and 60s. And the other person was former President Barack Obama, who credited Gandhi, not Martin Luther King, with inspiring him to his own values. And why I chose Gandhi? It's very hard to find somebody with a moral compass these days in a leadership position, to be quite blunt. And we are lacking heroes who can show us the way to live a more righteous, shall I say, life, or just a life with high moral values. So I have, as you know, I've traveled to India a lot, and this man jumped out to me as a 20th century man we can follow into the 21st century. In fact, Pat, last weekend, I attended a conference at Stanford University called The Uplift of All, Gandhi, King, and the Global Struggle for Freedom and Justice, which brought together the Indian community and the African-American community, leaders from around the world, including descendants of both Gandhi and King.
Oh.
And they were talking about how to mobilize both communities, the African-Americans and the Indians, have this man that they look up to. Why not begin to actually practice his principles and not just, you know, talky-talk about them?
Let's talk about those principles, six of them. Truth, nonviolence, living simply, vegetarianism, faith, and celibacy. Yikes. Let's take celibacy first. No sex?
No sex. Gandhi felt that one could be more pure without sex. Sex is a distraction of the mind and the body, and he felt that it took energy away from the principal focus, which is to live a life of purity. I have to admit myself, since I'm not married and not dating anyone, that I've been involuntarily celibate for the last couple of years. but it's very interesting to make a conscious choice not to have any sexual activity. It makes you look at the ways our society is geared towards trying to stimulate us sexually. Television, commercials, all the ways in which we look around us and see that both men and women have become sexual objects. I can't watch videos on MTV without thinking that it's kind of a soft porn. It's too much flesh.
As an aside, what if you meet someone?
Well, this someone would have to have the patience of Job to flip the religious script to be with me. And I think that what would happen would we become better and closer friends before we become lovers. But I'm waiting to see. With my luck, Pat, as soon as I've declared myself to be celibate, the woman of my dreams will show up in my life.
That's what always happens, right? That's what always happens. Well, let's.
She may already have.
There you go. Well, fingers crossed on that one. So let's tackle another principle, vegetarianism. Included in this, you're not going to be drinking alcohol either.
That's right. In the effort to become more pure, I'm stopping alcohol. I love a glass of wine. I love a dry vodka martini. But Gandhi was raised in a religious Hindu vegetarian family in India. When he went to England, he became more intellectual about it, and he joined the London Society of Vegetarians. And I'm going to England to study there for a couple of weeks. And I grew up in a classic American diet, a meat and potatoes boy from New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And we had meat almost every dinner. My dad made a killer steak on the barbecue. Unfortunately, those eating habits almost nearly killed him. He had a heart attack at the age of 64, which is why I've been so concerned myself about my health, because as we know, coronary health follows the male lineage. And I have a healthy heart. Doctors have always told me I have the heart of a teenager, although I think they thought I was just immature, maybe. In my 20s, I was a macrobiotic, so I'm not ignorant to the diet of a non-meat-eating tradition. But I am rereading the old cookbook, the Moosewood Cookbook. It was the first vegetarian cookbook in America and sold 1 million copies. And so I'm re-familiarizing myself with the vegetarian diet. And what I found, among other things so far, is that it's not the hamburger or the veal or whatever other meats I ate that actually satiate me. It's the idea of them. This is where comfort food comes from. We eat certain foods that remind us of happy times in our past. Yeah. So the idea of a big steak dinner is a kind of iconic goal. But in fact, after two bites of a filet mignon, it's like filling to me, and yes, it's difficult to eat. Mm-hmm. So I'm reevaluating that. And of course, we know all the health benefits of a non-meat meal. In fact, my friend Belgin Aksoy, who I think you had on recently, turned me on to two documentary films that really turned me around that I'd like to recommend. One is called Cowspiracy, about how basically raising cows depletes the environment. And the other one is called Forks Over Knives, which also promotes a plant-free diet.
That's a good one. What about nonviolence? You're not a violent, kind of angry guy anyway. So this, I would think this would be more easy for you. Does this include hate also, or, you know, getting worked up about something?
Yeah, we live in violent times. So we're surrounded by violence on TV and, you know, even watching American football. You can't watch the news without hearing about something violent. So whether it's in me or around me, it has an impact. And this is true of all of us. And so for myself, I've never actually been in a punching match with anybody, but I'm guilty of road rage. We're all now aware of airplane rage, which actually is a story I want to try to write for the New York Times, because there's too many incidences on airplanes where injustices are done. But we all kind of have a little violence in us. So even passive aggressiveness is a kind of violent act. And then there's the violence internally that we commit against ourselves. We beat ourselves up for, missing an exit or dropping something. And yeah. I'm guilty of that all the time. So I'm looking at these examples. Of course, Gandhi, his famous line was, "An eye for an eye makes the whole world blind." So violence, we see violence begets violence, and we see it every day in the world today. I looked at the long history of violence when I wrote my last book about Buddhism, and I've always been moved by that scene from the opening of 2001, A Space Odyssey, when we see the moment that the apes discovered how to use bones from a skeleton of another ape yeah. as a weapon against the other apes to take over a watering hole. The fact is, this violent nature has been with us since time immemorial. And can we reverse it? Did Gandhi reverse it? He tried, and for himself, he achieved it, I think. And you know, we have to remember, he died a violent death. He was assassinated, and we in America have experienced that way too much, and school shootings around the country have become an embarrassment, actually. So for myself, what I'm going to do is I'm attending these classes. Even our language is full of violent subtext. So I'm taking courses in a movement called Nonviolent Communication, NVC, and looking at ways that I can extract from the words and phrases I use that contain a kind of violence, passive aggressiveness, as I said, or sarcasm. I grew up in New Jersey, so I grew up with sarcasm.
Yeah.
So that's the way I'm taking on the whole violence thing.
That is fascinating. So what will you do when you do fall off the wagon in your quest?
That's a really good question. And really, I've taken it to the end game. After the 365 days of my Gandhian lifestyle, will I go back to meat and my other vices? I think that it will change me. I do think that I will fall off the wagon, but there's an old Zen saying, fall off the meditation cushion 9 times, get up on it 10. So if I do fall off, and so far I haven't, I will very gently bring myself back, just like in meditation, bring yourself back to the breath. I will be aware that I did this. In fact, here's an example. I swore off TV that portrays violence.
Oh.
So I stopped watching football, except I've watched a game or two. In the first game, I watched with my son-in-law, and I said, I'll take notes and, notice the violence.
Yeah.
But I have found that I would like to watch the game, and there's something seasonal. There's a seasonality to football. It's a fall sport.
Yeah.
So as the days get shorter, the Sunday you can watch 3 football games. But I am quite aware, and I was made aware of the violence of football from an early age. My mother was a pacifist, and her favorite phrase was, "This is another example of man's inhumanity to man." And she would say that in the middle of a, New York Giants football game or a Jets game. Let me say one other thing while we're speaking about violence. So truth is one of the other principles and the main pillar.
Notice how we went right over that one.
Yes. So he tied truth and nonviolence together. That if you're not in truth, it almost automatically leads to a violent kind of way of thinking. Gandhi was talking about an absolute truth. Which to me sounded like the ultimate truth that the Buddha talked about from my last book, Buddha or Bust. But ultimate truth or absolute truth is really closer to a concept of God, or if not God, godliness, that it is so fundamental to being human. For a human being to be human, you have to live in truth. So truth is not just lying, which seems to be on the uptick. And there's research I'll share in my book about the uptick of lying. But we tell ourselves little lies. We lie to each other about little things. And then we get caught up in that lie syndrome, which leads to a lot of stress. And I was looking up studies in the last couple of days about truth and stress. And there's a high correlation between people who tell the truth and health than liars and their ill health.
Wow.
So I'm looking at all that.
So this begins officially when, and when does it end officially?
It began during this past summer.
Okay.
I kind of jumped in on my birthday, which was July 30th.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me a little while to get into it. It will end next November. I've moved into it slowly, so I'm giving myself a year. So it's basically from this past summer to next summer, but I'm giving myself another month or two. I discovered something. I thought the day I signed the contract, I would go cold turkey on all six of these principles. It's difficult, Pat. I will be the first to admit. So I've stolen a page from my rheumatologist, who, when he was giving me prednisone for my little autoimmune dysfunction, he you taper off of it. You start with whatever it is, 20 milligrams, and you taper off, because the body, to go cold turkey, it would be a jolt to the body. And I found that it was a jolt to the mind and the body to just go cold turkey. So I reduced, like, for instance, with the vegetarianism. I remember in the last couple of weeks of my building up to it, I cut out meat, and then I cut out chicken, mm-hmm. and then I cut out fish. And then the 2 days before I really started, I went out for a big filet mignon when I was actually visiting New Jersey. And that was when I realized, after the second bite, it's not such a great experience. I love the meat, but how much of it is actually good for me and how much of it is tasty? So I've done the same with everything. And the tapering off I'm well into the tapering off. And I think when I come out the other end, I will, excuse the pun, but I will lose my taste for meat. And for some of these other vices, I'm not, I'm not a candidate for delinquency, but we all live with a little more impurity than we could. And that's the goal of this book, is to show that these moral principles are like goals at the end of the field that we can strive for, that will improve our life. And then you find a balance. Maybe I'll go back to eating things with eyes, but with a little more consciousness. And I may become a vegetarian completely. Mm. But these other issues about, we didn't talk about faith, to increase your faith and simplicity.
Yeah.
It's a good thing. And it's good for our body, our minds, our state of well-being, I think.
Well, sounds very intriguing, and keep us posted along the way, please, and we'll be thinking of you.
I hope you will, and I will keep you posted. I've also sworn off of, or I'm tapering down from, watching the news and doing things like media appearances. But for you, Pat, I would come back anytime, and we can talk about other things. But please have me on in a year when I'm Gandhiized, and we'll keep up the dialogue.
Excellent.